Stop.
Oh, you know what time it is, everybody. It's time for the Forbidden Door Forbidden After Party, brought to you by Great Lakes Brewery. And you know us, we're Sunday night's main event. Look at that door opening graphic. This is impressive stuff. I'm impressed with myself. Please welcome to the stage, and by stage I mean place in their house with the best Wi-Fi, Dan the Mouth Labransky and Boris Aguilar.
All right, thank you very much, Mr. Mark Andrada, playing the best Ed McMahon I've seen in many years there, and all that beautiful graphic work there. Man, door after door after door after door. We went through them all tonight on this pay-per-view. Hello, everybody. Hope you're doing well. Hope you're feeling good after the show. Just super quick. Let's just start really super quick. Boris, yes, no, up, down. What did you think?
I need a smoke after that show.
Whoa, hello, sailor. Okay, we know how Boris is feeling then. And Mark, I'm going to make you jump in super quick, even though you might not want to.
I feel good. Yeah, I really enjoyed that show. I enjoyed that show a lot. The front half more than the back half. But
okay.
Absolutely, great time.
All right, I think this is it for me. I think we learned some interesting things with AEW, that's for sure. I find it, because it's happened both ways. I find that if they have a really great go-home show, the pay-per-view was not so good. And then now, we had, horrible go-home show on Wednesday, and the pay-per-view, I think, literally, for most of it, knocked it out of the park. And, according to you guys, I missed what was one of the best matches of the night, and I still thought it was a pretty solid show. So, and it was good. And even though it was, I would technically say, a long show, it didn't feel long and drawn out like the last one did, in that same way with the last one where you were like, oh my God, because they were ramming in all those vignettes and pieces and bits. And this one tonight, they stayed away from that. This was bare bones. I really liked this was just basically match after match, not a lot of frills added onto it. So they got a lot of matches in there, yet they didn't, to me anyways, it didn't have that long drawn out feeling like it did last time.
Yeah, agreed 100% with that, like everything you said. And it's funny because, like, as we were recording on Thursday, and we were kind of, like, for lack of a better term, shitting on this show.
Yeah, oh, we were upset.
I knew we were going to eat crow, and I even said it. Like, and I said it as we were getting ready. This was the most WWE show and pay-per-view ever. And by that I mean, you know, lackluster build, lackluster shows, lackluster everything up until the actual show, and then the show itself, like I said, it just blew expectations out of the water. And it's funny because the match that I think that you and I were least interested in seeing may have been a match of the night.
There you go. Okay, so let's start it off here because just within the last few days after Dynamite, they added two or three extra matches here to the buy-in show, and instead of just having one or two, and even really promoting, they spent the whole buy-in showing us matches. So we had QT Marshall and Aaron Solo against Hirooki Goto and Yoshihashi from New Japan. Right out of the gate, we noticed that we have a Japanese ring announcer to go along with Justin Roberts. This crowd in Chicago, they're one of the big reasons this was such a great show as well tonight. These guys were nuts. They were into this show from the first match on the buy-in. Like, even during this match, they were worked up. They were yelling. They were screaming. The whole place looked pretty packed right from the get-go. You didn't get that kind of, oh, yeah, people are going to filter in because they know Booker T is going to make bad jokes for half an hour. It was, like, packed and ready to go. So, yeah, the show starts off really great here. I mean, I'm not going to spend a lot of time going through the match, although I do get a kick out of whenever Goto and Yoshihashi do the war drums. I think that's kind of like a goofy but fun little spot there. QT got, you know, QT and Aaron Solo got some stuff. QT got the diamond cutter on Yoshihashi at one point, but Goto breaks up the pin. But then Goto, he pins Solo after he and Yoshihashi lay him out with that. They do a combo move there. I don't know what it's called. Boris, did you catch the name? I think they said it, but I missed it.
No, I didn't catch it. I was kind of like tuning in and out during the buy-in, to be 100% honest. And then I'm like, right after this match, I'm like, okay, I'm going to pay attention.
Okay, well, anyways, it was nothing special, really. But again, as for a buy-in type opening show, it was a fine little thing to get things started. There was a little short, really short vignette pushing the four-way for the IWGP title with all four of the participants talking. Next, we got another match that was totally added out of the blue here. Lance Archer and Nick Comoroto, the Battle of the Big Guys kind of match here. It's a shame they couldn't have built this up something or done something, because Comoroto is one of those guys to me that I don't want to say drop the ball, because I don't even think they've got the ball. They've done like literally nothing with him, and he just seems to have such great presence. And I just think he deserves a push as a big size guy here. So I don't know why we couldn't have. But then again, this match was probably decided like the day before or something.
Yeah, that's what it seemed like, and I agree with you. Like, I think Camarado has gotten the short end of the stick
totally
in a lot of his matches, right? Did you notice that Archer almost broke his neck getting into the ring? So he goes in, he from the apron, he does this cannonball dive and almost falls right on the top of his head.
Yeah, that was not exactly the best way to start the match. This was basically what you'd expect. A lot of brawling, a lot of big shots and forearms and stuff like that. You know, I have to say, though, when Lance Archer, like when Undertaker used to do the walk across the top rope, I never used to think, oh, the guy on the bottom should just pull him off the top rope. It's like, no, because when Undertaker did it, there was something about the way they would do it and his presence would carry it. Whereas when Lance Archer did it, all I could think of was like, hey, why doesn't Comoroto just pull him off the top rope and send him crashing to the floor? He doesn't seem to, the way he goes about it, I think because he looks like he's trying his best not to flub it up, that it doesn't have any kind of presence like when Taker did it. It's like he's trying not to fall on his ass here. So it really it doesn't really work for me when he does it. But Archer, of course, does get the win, as you'd figure. He gets the blackout on Comoroto and pins him. It was like, meh.
Yeah, meh.
Clark Connors, who is the fill-in for the man I most wanted to see on this pay-per-view, the one thing that broke my heart in two and still will never mend, is that Tomohiro Ishii hurt himself right before this and couldn't be in the four-way, so Clark Connors gets the spot instead in the All-Atlantic Tournament. He just does a really basic promo here, said he's going to knock the hinges off the forbidden door, blah, blah, blah. Doesn't matter what he say. He's not Ishii. Okay, so after this, we had Keith Lee and Swerve Strickland against Yoshinobu Kanemaru and Desperado. Of course, Kanemaru comes out with the whiskey bottle. I don't know if you know him from New Japan. That's what he does. He tends to use the whiskey, puts the whiskey in his mouth, and spits it at one of his opponents. Hey, man, I'll take a mouthful of bourbon over the Black Mist any day of the week, right?
Same here.
Yeah, so it's not really a heel spot for me and Boris, I don't think.
nope.
So this one is with Kanemaru and Desperado. They're going after the knees on both guys, especially on Keith Lee, doing the drop kicks to the knee, taking out the knee. Lee did get to do some power spots. He did the one where he had Kanemaru upside down and kind of used him, swung him like a pendulum and was smacking his partner with him. And Lee gets that big, weird monster power slam thing he does on Kanemaru on the end and gets the win. So Keith Lee and Swerve Strickland win that one. And we had one more. And now this one, I didn't get to see it. It was the Ass Boys and Max Caster against, I can't remember because I don't have it written down. Cause I was having troubles. We were getting some crappy weather here, and when it gets crappy and rains or snows and stuff, my satellite dish gets really testy and cuts the signal quickly. So I didn't get to see any of this match. Did we miss anything of interest here, Boris?
Not really. So it was against DKC, Kevin Knight, Alex Coughlin.
Right,
and
the dojo
Yuya
guys.
Uemura.
Yeah, the dojo
the
guys.
LA Dojo. Now, what was cool here, well, cool, depends how you see it. Danhausen shows up on the screen, the Ass Boys song goes on, and Colton and Austin Gunn literally run out, and that's it. That's the last time that we saw them for the night, and it essentially turned into Max Caster and Billy Gunn against the LA Dojo, and this match was, it was fine. It just went like, what, 5 minutes, and Caster was tagged in. He hit the mic drop elbow on DC, pinned him, and that was it. It was a fine match, but it was your typical New Japan Young Lion match.
Okay, so and that took us to the end of the buy-in. It's like I said, the buy-in was the same as the pay-per-view. Very streamlined, no really fooling around, and just wanted to get these matches in here. Whether they really, some of those matches were even needed in any way. Again, I think maybe you could have done some more profiles of the Japanese guys, but that's what they did. So now we get into the show itself, and we get the Jericho Appreciation Society match to start things off here. So it's Jericho and Sammy Guevara and Minoru Suzuki against Eddie Kingston and Wheeler Yuta and Shoto Umino from New Japan. So I did get to see most of this. I still was having issues with the satellites. I felt like the early days of like when you're a teenager and your parents won't let you order the pay-per-view, so you went and watched the scrambled signal. Because when I was a kid, sometimes the scrambled signal, every once in a while, it would stabilize and you could actually see something happening. That's kind of how I felt like here with the satellite crapping out here. But this one, I mean, it's what you would expect. It would have lots of brawling in it, right? You know, Eddie Kingston, Minoru Suzuki, you're going at it with chops on each other. Kingston's chopping the shit out of Jericho at one point. Minoru Suzuki gets Kingston in an arm bar in the ropes. Jericho's working the arm as well. They did this one spot where all three of the Jericho Appreciation guys had the other guys in submissions all at the same time. And the crowd definitely was into this one as well. They did one of those ones they always like to do in these type of matches where each guy takes out the next guy. Like, one guy will take out a guy, and then someone comes in and takes out that guy, and then someone comes in and takes out that guy. They did one of those, which is kind of common in these kind of matches. Umino did a power slam of Jericho off the top rope for a near fall. Sammy had Wheeler Yuta up on the outside at one point, gave him the GTS. Umino had the upper hand on Jericho, but then Sammy corked him with the bat, and then Umino came back with a DDT and the brainbuster for a near fall on Jericho, and Umino even used the walls of Jericho on Jericho, and the crowd went nuts when he did this spot. Like, it's, again, you know how much we talk about, oh, they don't know who these guys are in that. Yet during this show, unless this was 16,000 of the smartest friggin' wrestling fans I've ever seen, they reacted to these guys whether they knew them or not.
It was Chicago, you know what? And I give full credit to whomever booked this building. It was the right building for this show. Regardless of what the setup was going to be, the crowd in Chicago is typically a very smart crowd. They knew, and they obviously knew who these people were, right? You know, the fact that they knew of the history behind Jericho and Umino, fantastic.
Right.
And they really played up to it, and that spot show proved it. And you knew that the show was going to be special with the crowd at mm-hmm. that point. Like, you mm-hmm. knew that it was just, oh, and it was great. It was really good.
It was very early on, even during the buy-in, I'm thinking, wow, these guys, they're going nuts for these guys. They don't even know who some of them are. So, yeah, it was definitely the right place for this show to be. Where were we here? Umino had Jericho in the wall. Sammy comes in, kicks him in the head to break it up. Suzuki grabs Sammy, though, gives him the Gotch pile driver. And then Umino got another small comeback, but then Jericho gets his swinging back fist there, the Judas effect, corks him, and he gets the pin. I thought it was good opening match. Crowd was totally amped up for it.
They also added that stipulation, right? The winning team gets the man advantage
of
blood and guts.
Right. That is right.
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, so opening match, very good. It's got the crowd definitely worked up. Okay, so we do the tag match here next, the three-way with Roppongi Vice, so Trent Beretta and Rocky Romero against Jeff Cobb and the Great O'Con. Is the Great O'Con related to Killer Khan? Is he like Killer Khan's son? I don't know. I'm just curious about that. And then we also had FTR in there as well. This one they did it, even though it was a three-way with tags. Let's see. FTR have the Ring of Honor belts, and Cobb and O'Con had the IWGP ones. So it was whoever won gets everything. Is that how it worked here?
That's exactly. Winner take all.
Okay, I was somewhat confused by this. But they did work it like a regular tag, so you could only have two guys in at a time, but you could tag other guys that weren't your partner to weasel your way in, which happened many times. They did a spot really, really early on where Dax hurts his shoulder, and they take him out of the match really, really early, and they did it in such a way that you're almost questioning whether it was legit or not. But as we'll see later on, they were working us for sure. But it was very interesting the way they did it. So they took him out right away. So Cash is kind of left all on his own here. So, and basically that's the story, right? His team's isolating him and kind of pounding the crap out of him. So Cobb and O'Connor working over. They did a spot where poor Cash had his head on the top turnbuckle and O'Connor literally just sat on his head. He just sat right on his head. So they just kept him in there. They were beating him down. Trent got himself tagged in at one point. So they had a run with Cobb and O'Con, and then Cash, he's just kind of out of it for a while. The announcer said Dax had dislocated his shoulder. That's why he was out of the match. Cash gets himself tagged back in, but then he gets beat up some more. Dax comes back. He comes out in the classic kind of Hulk Hogan way there, and he's got the shoulder and everything's all taped up, but hot damn, he's going to go. And the crowd loved it. They totally ate it up. No one thought it was cornball. They were all over it. He gets the hot tag finally. The crowd went nuts. He did the Three Amigos on Jeff Cobb, which was pretty awesome. Crowd's going wild. Trent and Dax were doing a superplex to Cobb off the top. And then Cash tags in. He did a frog splash for a near fall that had the crowd totally going nuts. I think they totally thought that the match was going to end there. Of course, I look at this note here. Rocky Romero did lots of crazy dives all through it. That's what Rocky does. He was all over the place. Roppongi Vice, they gave Cobb the strong zero, but then Dax broke it up. Broke up the pin at the last minute. I really liked in this one how they had the guys from the other teams constantly breaking up pins rather than guys kicking out all the time. FTR got the big rig on Rocky Romero, and they get the win. So they now have the IWGP tag titles to go along with the Ring of Honor tag titles as well. I thought the match was great. All three teams worked really hard together. And, you know, they did good storytelling with this whole thing that Cash had to take on the whole part of the early match by himself. Dax finally comes back, and they rise above it, and they get to win the titles. So there you go. Another set of belts for FTR.
Yep. The belt collectors continue. I love this just because, this pay-per-view has been plagued with injuries. So the fact that they worked a fake injury into one of the matches, just brilliant. I love that.
It is kind of funny when you think of it, because this has been the promotion that has been plagued with the injuries lately. That's for sure.
Yep.
Okay, so we had a quick little vignette because Tony Schiavone is there. The commentary is Taz, Excalibur, and Kevin Kelly because he's so familiar with all the New Japan guys. He does all the shows for New Japan World. So there was no JR and there was no Schiavone off the top, which I thought was very weird. I thought for a major show like this, not to have Schiavone on the desk all the time was really, really weird. But anyways, they had Tony back. We first see him backstage, and he's with Juice Robinson, Jay White. Juice, I think, said he was rock hard. I think he said that. I'm pretty sure.
Something like that.
He went on. Nickname, he, right? he, Well, he basically went on about Ospreay and Orange Cassidy, and Jay White said he will beat them all. It was a really short, quick little promo. Okay, so next up, this match, wow, these guys, this was great. This was Malakai Black versus Pac versus Miro versus Clark Connors for this all-new All-Atlantic Championship. Clark Connors gets the spot. He was in the match against Ishii to get the spot. Ishii won the match, but then Ishii was injured, so they gave it to Clark Connors. Okay, so like this was great. These guys worked like super, super hard in this one, that's for sure. And you know, and they really worked this not in the kind of the traditional way to work a four-way like this is usually someone gets taken out for a while and they lay behind and then a couple guys will go at it or something. These guys seemed to me like to always be all four in on each other. All the time. They were just like yep. all in there constantly working with each other. It was great. They had some great stuff with Miro really dominating, taking out Black, taking out Pac. Pac got to run wild as well. There was one spot where Black went and grabbed a table out from under the ring and he propped it up against the audience barrier and he almost smacked some little kid in the face with the table there. He's a little overexcited there. Pac is doing his crazy dives. He did one to the outside. Miro just catches him. I love Miro just catches him. Connors spears Miro through the table that Black set up there on the barrier. That got a huge, huge pop. That allowed Connors, he got to be in control for a little bit after that. And he almost pinned Pac, but Malakai broke that up. They did this crazy spot on the top post in the corner with one of those four men where they're all kind of up there together trying to do a spot, and Miro just comes in underneath them and like kind of throws all three of them off the top there. Miro gave Pac a kick in the head and he screamed for the game over and he locked it in and the crowd just went nuts. Like they were like, you know, I may say game over is the worst name for a move, but man, it is over. Never mind. Like as soon as he yells it, the crowd just went nuts, locks it in. They're freaking out. But at this point, Black comes in. He gives Miro the mist in the face. And then Connor comes in after Black. And then Pac does the 450 splash onto Malakai, and he puts the brutalizer on Connors right away, and Connors taps instantly. So Pac actually is the All-Atlantic Championship. He's the first champion. You know, we talked about this. We really didn't think that they needed an extra title, and I still don't think they need an extra title. But for the debut of a new title, this was a super strong, exciting, really good match. Really made it look strong. You know, I thought it was a great way. We don't need it, but it was a great way to introduce it. And I like Pac. As much as I was kind of rooting for Miro to get it, I don't mind Pac with it. And I thought this was one of the best matches on the show, too.
Yeah, agreed. This match was great. And you know what it reminded me a lot of? The old X Division Championship matches where,
right.
You know how you were saying at the top, like, you know, it's not your typical four-way match when it was just two guys in the ring, two guys kind of chilling outside. All four guys were just constantly in the ring.
Yeah.
And I love that. It just reminded me of the old X Division. And I think everybody was kind of pushing for Miro to a certain extent. But I love when Pac got the win. Everyone started just the "you deserve it" chant. This was a great way to introduce a new belt. And, you know, I'm curious to kind of see how this belt is going to be defended. Like, mm-hmm. Is Pac going to go to New Japan? Is this just an AEW belt? Like, what's going on?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, absolutely. And honestly, if you wanted to, coming out of this, since he was in it, you could easily do Miro and Pac as the first challenge or something like that, or along those lines. Or I don't know if they want to continue the Pac and Malakai Black stuff that's kind of already there, I guess. But I see, obviously the matches are going to be good. You know, Pac, it's pretty hard for him to have a bad match with anybody. So, yep. Okay, so next up was this other tag match here, the six-man tag. Actually, this was supposed to be this is another match that got changed. This was supposed to be an eight-man as well, but one of the guys got hurt. So this ended up being Takagi and Darby Allin and Sting against the Young Bucks and El Fantasmo. Now, this is the one where Tony came out, and this was the only one that Schiavone did commentary on, and I guess it's because of the Sting. That seemed to be the reason he was out there. They were making a lot of dumb jokes about that. So everybody's coming out, except they play Sting's music, and Sting doesn't come out when he's introduced. So that's weird. It's just Darby and what's his name? Takagi. And so they're out there by themselves in the ring. And then the Bucks come out. And then as the Bucks are coming out, it goes black. And then the lights come back on. And they're showing up at the top of the building, like in the catwalk. And it's like are they teasing is it Sting up there? What's Sting? And they're teasing like the old Crow character he did there in WCW, always being up in the rafters. And then the lights come on, and then all of a sudden we see Sting, and he's on top of one of the tunnels that the guys come out of, and the Bucks and them are there, and Sting does this fucking crazy, crazy dive off the top of the tunnel. I'm just like, you're fucking lunatic, man. And well, obviously it was well set up, and the guys all caught him and everything, and he it was great. It worked out. But I'm just like, Sting is like just this wild maniac. Now, you know, it's so funny because there's all this talk. And, you know, Ric Flair put out another video once again saying, like, don't you question me. I'm coming back. I'm going to be the greatest. And everybody's worried. But, like, Sting is out here, and he from that same era almost, and he's just, like, insane, man. Yeah. Crazy. So
I got to stop because this comment just made me laugh. From Henry Ross, Sting not selling the titty twister made me laugh my fucking ass off. I died also.
Yeah, well, of course, because they have him constantly no-selling big moves, and it's like, yes, not even the titty twister will take down Sting. So, after that crazy Sting dive, the match just kind of gets underway. Takagi and Sting are going at it at first. Crowd is going crazy. I mean, I guess so. After seeing that Sting dive, they're pretty worked up. El Fantasmo, he did this really crazy, exaggerated backbreaker on Darby. So they kind of isolated Darby. They worked him over for a while. Takagi finally gets the hot tag. He takes control. Sting, once again, is insane. He's in there going wild. Stinger splashes all left, right, and center. And then, as you mentioned, Fantasmo gives Sting the titty twister. He doesn't sell it at all. He also didn't sell a double super kick from the Bucks, and the crowd went nuts on that. Because, again, you know, think how that's so well protected with the Bucks. No one's ever stood there. So, I mean, crowd just going crazy. This one was, as you'd expect, very fast-paced. Had a lot of great spots with the various teams breaking up each other's falls. Sting was about to do a dive, another crazy dive to the outside, but ran into a triple super kick, which was, they executed it great, and the crowd booed the Bucks. These guys were so behind Sting, it was amazing. But then Sting grabs both the Bucks, gives them double scorpion death drops, and then finally Sting gets to give Fantasmo the titty twister. And then Takagi, Fantasmo are slugging it out at one point. Takagi gets the last of the dragon on Fantasmo and pins him. Again, crowd loved it. I thought it was super fun, and Sting is insane. That's like it was good. It was a good, fun match. I mean, I don't know if Sting should be doing crazy dives like that. I mean, it was well protected, and they did catch him. But yeah, he must be having the time of his life, man, because the guy's going crazy.
Yeah, no, he for sure is. Like, it's so funny just because, like, it seems like every other week he does a dive from somewhere that he shouldn't be doing a dive for someone his age.
Yeah, it's crazy. But anyways, again, so another great match. So show is just rolling along at nice pace now. After this, they announced Grand Slam Dynamite and Rampage Grand Slam July 22nd. We started to do a promo here. It was Tony with Umino after the match. But then Parker and Lee, Jericho, they come in. They say they want respect. And then Jericho gives him a fireball. And now this segment, I was like, why? What was this here for? Why did you need to give this guy, who really means nothing in the big picture, a fireball? Like,
you know what,
like,
it is?
Me, like, to
They're
me,
still
this...
selling tickets for Wednesday's Dynamite in Detroit. That's what it is.
Well, but, okay, but... Yeah, well, they certainly this wasn't the first time they were going to do that either in this pay-per-view. I don't know. I guess obviously that's the idea, but it just seems so, like, to, again, I've harped about this before. The fireball thing to me is a big thing, and I just don't think it should be done on every Tom, Dick, and Harry that comes into the room. It should be a special saved thing. You know, Jericho needs to read the new book about the Sheik.
But I think that's it, Dan. I think he's doing it every time, almost as a gag. Like that's honestly what I think. I really do think that he's doing it so often as a gag, not because he wants to per se. I know that sounds stupid and crazy, but
it does. That's it really sounds really I stupid. I don't. I think it's completely stupid. If that's what he's trying to do, it's pretty stupid. Okay, so after this, we get to the women's title match. So that's Thunder Rosa against Toni Storm. Rosa comes out with some crazy Aztec-style gear. Looked pretty amazing. Yeah. Again, the crowd is not taking any breathers here. They are not resting. They were pretty excited for this one as well. And these, I thought the two ladies worked together well here. Storm did a crazy German on the apron to Thunder Rosa. She also did that killer running hip into the corner where she just runs and plasters. I'm like, good Lord, that looks so intense. Yeah. Rosa did a Death Valley driver, and then she did the Fire Thunder driver, but actually Storm kicked out of that. But Rosa ends up winning with that neck breaker that she does. I can't remember what it's called.
They call it the Final Reckoning.
Final Reckoning. Okay. So she did the Final Reckoning. So she wins, keeps the title. They shook hands at the end. I mean, I didn't think it was like an outstanding match or anything, but I thought it was okay.
I honestly thought that this was a good match. Don't get me wrong. Everyone, tranquilo. Stop sending me hate mail. But I honestly had higher expectations for this match.
In what way?
I thought, like, I don't know. I just thought the history between, like, just from a pure wrestling point of view, I think that these two are so well matched.
Right.
I was honestly expecting this to like be maybe match of the night. And I'm not saying it was bad.
No.
I just didn't live up to what I thought in my head. And, you know, that's a mea culpa.
I would agree with you that in the context of what we have already seen to this point and other matches on the show, that it wasn't up to... I didn't feel it was on the level of a lot of the other matches on the show. I kind of just felt like it was there. Like, at the end of it, I didn't feel like... Like you said, I didn't feel like it was a bad match, but then I didn't feel like it was anything special either. So it was kind of weird.
Yeah. Craig J. actually said something interesting that I didn't think about right now. If there was ever a death slot on the show, it was after three super fast multi-man matches.
Yeah.
Whoever had the 1v1 at this point in the show would have suffered.
Yeah.
And it's kind of true.
Yeah. No, I would not argue that either. Okay, so next up was the Will Ospreay and Orange Cassidy. Now, I missed most of this because... I had satellite issues.
Match. Yeah, I didn't want to watch this match.
Everybody's telling me. I think I am intrigued because the fact that by the time my satellite came back, it was still going on, which I was surprised by. And I did see the lead up and the finish, which I thought was well done. So all I saw was the opening where they brought JR out to do commentary on this match.
Number one, I have to say, I love the fact that you have satellite. Like, that kills me on so many levels. But so this match, honestly, like, if you guys listen to our the show from earlier in the week, you know that this match was a match that we've been, for lack of a better term, shitting on. You know, it's like we think that Will Ospreay is one of the best, if not one, like, the best wrestlers in the world, and Orange Cassidy was kind of like not the right opponent for him. I'm eating crow. I'll say that 100%. And I knew in the back of my head this was going to happen. So early on, Ospreay takes control Cassidy gives him the thumbs up, the smile. That kind of pisses Ospreay off a little more. There's a lot of back and forth here. Ospreay sets him up for his finisher. Cassidy falls over, and then Ospreay starts toying with him. So it's, you know, that story of Will Ospreay not taking him too serious at this point. You know, he was still kind of, you know, sussing him out and seeing, you know, this guy's a joke. So that was essentially the story for the first half of the match. You know, eventually Cassidy performs a stunner and a Michinoku driver. We get a huge "This is awesome" chant. Cassidy then does a DDT, sends Ospreay to the floor. Cassidy does a dive. A little bit after this, Ospreay catches Cassidy on the ropes. He threw a kick at him. Ospreay went for the ropes again, but Cassidy climbs up behind him. He wanted a suplex, but Ospreay avoided this. Again, a lot more back and forth, and the match was still, you know, it was 50-50 at that point, and this is when that trigger or that button hits on Ospreay. I gotta take this MF-er a little more seriously, and I really like this because at this point Cassidy is almost getting that win. He's almost getting that win. Cassidy gets a Big Bang Theory for a super close fall at this point. Cassidy removes his elbow pad. He signaled for his orange punch. But when he went for the move, Ospreay dropped him with a cutter. He hit a springboard cutter for another super close fall. Ospreay comes up. He hits him with a lariat, turns Cassidy inside out. Ospreay hit the Hidden Blade for another super close fall. Cassidy held up his thumb. Ospreay stood up, and he hits the Stormbreaker, gets the win. 17 minutes, still IWGP U.S. champion.
Yeah, that's all I saw was the finish there, from the orange punch into the cutters and the Stormbreaker. And it's funny because when I just seeing even that bit of it, I'm like, wow. This looks like it was probably pretty good. Even just from seeing that little bit, so I'll definitely have to go back and watch the rest of it.
Yeah, it was honestly a good, like, I'm torn just because in the back of my mind, I kind of didn't know it was going to be a good match. But I think what really added to this match was the crowd. As we've been saying all night, the crowd just added that, as the French say, I don't know what, to the entire show. And this match showed it. Like, this match, the crowd was just eating every single spot. Punches were getting huge pops.
I know.
Punches.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, like you said, this was the right place to do this show. Now, we have to talk about what happened here at the end. This was a big one for me. I popped pretty huge here for this because I did not know this was happening, and he was one of my faves. And I love his entrance music, too. So,
yes.
Anyways, the match is done. So, of course, Aussie Open come down. Ospreay's buddies there. They attack Orange. But then, of course, Trent and Rocky run down as well, and they're all going at it. And Aussie Open's is beating them all up really quickly. And then all of a sudden, you hear those notes, man. You hear those few notes, and I'm like, holy, it's friggin' Shibata's music. It's Shibata. And the crowd... This might have been the biggest, most amazing crowd moment of the night, in that crowd of 16,000 was all popping the same as me. They recognized that music instantly. I was so stunned. I thought that was amazing. And sure enough, Shibata comes out. He clears house. He faces off with Ospreay. The crowd's going nuts. They're doing a holy shit chant. I'm doing a holy shit chant. It's just like, I was just so excited to see him come back. Looks like he's ready to go. Looks like,
honestly, maybe go from a 6 to a 12 really fast.
Like, he's ready to go. He beat down Ospreay, gave him a drop kick in the corner, put him in a sleeper. But then, of course, Aussie Open grab him. They pulled him out of there. This was just amazing. Shibata faced off with Orange Cassidy, and Orange went to put the shades on himself, and he put them on Shibata instead, gave him the thumbs up. Crowd was going wild. I thought great way to bring Shibata back. Kind of interesting that he makes his return on an AEW show rather than a New Japan show. But I still thought it was an excellent moment, and completely blown away that the crowd recognized his music.
What's so funny is, like, literally, as this match is starting, I'm like, you know what? No one has even mentioned Shibata at any point. Like, I don't know why. Like, that's who came to mind at this very, like, at this moment as the match was starting. And I was just, like, blown away. Like, just absolutely blown away at the post-match angle. And it's crazy that the post-match angle, to me, made the match feel that much better. Like, not only was it a great match, but the post-match angle just elevated that so much more.
Yeah, it was pretty spectacular. And I was certainly glad that my reception had improved and everything was good by that point, because I would have been super pissed if I had missed Shibata's return, that's for sure.
Yes,
that
exactly,
was so great.
Exactly.
Okay, so up next, we had the Zack Sabre Jr. versus who? Who's it going to be? This was fine with me. I had no problem with this. It was Claudio Castagnoli, the former Cesaro. He was back. This crowd was not disappointed by this either. They loved it. They went nuts. They were going crazy. This match was great. I mean, these two work together so well. I mean, they have very many similar stylistic elements, like uppercuts and forearms and all that kind of stuff. You know, starts off with Claudio just runs at him, gives him a forearm and that kind of frontal pile driver kind of thing he does. But, like, of course, Zach kicks out from that. It's almost like the Claudio trying to take him out right away. Did you notice, Boris, that during the whole match, he just looked so happy to be there? Like, did you know that he was smiling the entire match? Like, the entire
match. As soon as he came out, you could just, like, almost see that smile that he had. And you know what? Like, people can say whatever. Like, at the end of the day, you know, he is now kind of doing his thing, right? For lack of a better term.
Yep.
And I'm so happy for him.
I loved it.
He just looked so happy.
He did. And,
yeah. And who better than Zack Sabre Jr. to have his first match against? And I, like, at this point, I had to honestly say, like, I wonder who's going to win, right? Because one thing that AEW is a little weird on is debuts and people getting that big win when they debut, right?
Okay, well, let's see. Let's go through here and find out what happened. I have written down here, this match wins for most forearms. These guys were crazy with the forearms and the uppercuts. They're both trying to work the arm of the other. They did this insane spot where Zach had Claudio in an arm bar, and Claudio, to try to get out of it, flips over the top rope, and they go to the floor, and they fall out. Zach still won't let it go, and Claudio actually walks all the way up the ring steps with Zach, holding Zach with his arm clamped on in the arm bar the whole time. It looked insane. He finally threw him over the top rope. This was great too, when he teased the swing, the first time he teased the swing, the crowd was going nuts, but he couldn't turn it and pull it off because Zach turned it into the guillotine choke. The crowd was actually calling for the swing, and when they finally did get to see it, they counted, of course, but he didn't do long because he was selling the story of the sore bicep, so he didn't really swing him for very long. And the finish was Claudio gets that high-end power bomb and he pins Zack Sabre for the win. So I have to admit, I was somewhat surprised, but Zack Sabre is not staying. I guess Claudio is. So it makes more sense, obviously, for Claudio to get the win. But it was a great match. Like, you know, you couldn't have picked. And how good, like, you know, he's the new member of the Blackpool Combat Club. Like, how perfect. He's perfect. And it's like Regal used to be the master of the friggin' uppercuts with the forearm. That was huge. And it's like, here's the guy that carries on that tradition in your group. So I'm all for it. I like that he's there, and I like that he's part of that group.
It makes sense, right? Like, it makes the most logical sense. You know, I was kind of doing some reading as the show continued, and they were basically saying that they're still working out, like, final details of the deal. It's looking to be a long-term deal, and essentially when Danielson was injured, this was like the most logical way of introducing him. So we'll see what ends up going on. We'll see when he gets the All Elite poster. But this was great. I love this. And like you said, you know, Zack Sabre Jr. is not going to stick around. So give Claudio the big win. What was really cool is right after the match when he's like, looks right to the camera and he's like, I don't know. I love you guys. Like, yeah. You know, again, going
so
back to what
happy.
We were saying.
Yeah.
So happy.
Yeah.
You know, I love it. Like, I love it. Like, this guy, I'm not going to shit talk WWE because he spent 10 plus years, made some good coin, but now he gets to do what he wants.
Okay, so up next was the four-way for the IWGP title. So the champion, Jay White, is defending against Adam Cole, Hangman Page, and Okada. So you're like, I'm like, wow, four high-octane guys in this match can be nothing but good. Of course, they keep playing up the idea, White and Adam Cole in the part of the Bullet Club being allies. So they are reluctantly working together, especially early on in the match. And then it kind of deteriorates as we go along. One of the first things they do is to kind of take Paige out for a bit. They give him a double vertical suplex on the ramp. So they take him out for a little bit later. And he comes back. Oh, yeah. Oh, man, yes. They did this insane spot in the ring where Paige did a moonsault. And he's coming up off the top. And Cole catches him right in the head with a kick. And I mean, like, right on the button. Like, right, it looked insane. This was definitely one of those shows where you're sitting here going, gee, oh, God. He caught him right in the head.
One of the best spots. And, like, I think they showed it later. And, like, in slow motion, somehow, it looked that much more impressive.
It was so, he just had laid out, he was just so right on the money with it. So, of course, you know, Adam Cole, eventually, he tacks Jay White, gives him a backbreaker, tries to pin him. Jay White's doing he likes to do those sleeper suplexes. They're friggin' insanely fast. Of course, Gato, who works with Jay White in New Japan, is kind of like his manager. Second, he interferes. Paige takes him out. Paige gets the dead eye on Jay White and the buckshot, and he goes for the pin, but Okada breaks it up. Okada and Paige, they face off. They start giving each other uppercuts. Okada goes for the Rainmaker on Cole, but he misses it. I love how they did the New Japan camera work when he tries for the Rainmaker and they did the big shot where the camera pulls back and everything. They were on it, man. They knew what they were doing. Okada, this was pretty crazy for the finish here. I liked the finish. Okada gives Cole the elbow off the top, and he's just about to pin him. But then Jay White runs in. He grabs Okada, gives him the Blade Runner, and then he runs over and pins Cole. So I thought that I like those kind of finishes where the one guy's just about to get it, and the other guy sneaks in and takes it from him. White gets to, of course, White retains the title. I think we all expected that he wasn't going to lose the title here. He gets out of there really quickly, like very fast. He's out of there, and we actually see the Bucks and the Red Dragon coming down to help these guys out. So, yeah, I thought it was a great match. They all worked together really well.
But one thing that should be noted is right after the match, you notice trainers right with Cole, the way he kind of collapsed with the Rainmaker.
Yes. Yes.
It was pretty obvious that he was injured.
Yes.
The crowd kind of reacted right away to that. But, and I did hear, I forget, I think it was JR who mentioned it, was that Cole was at least able to leave under his own power. So that's good. But I don't think that was the finish that they were honestly trying to go for. I think something happened and someone called like an audible
right
on the spot.
Well, maybe that's it. Maybe they had to run it quick. Cole was hurt legit. They needed to get him out of there. Could be. We'll have to see here. I'm just looking at the list here. Oh yeah. Okay. Well, we need to bring him on.
Oh, he'll be there. He'll come on.
Yeah. So according to Brian Alvarez, Cole was injured. So we'll have to follow.
Michael
that
Cole
there.
Was injured.
No. Since from day one. Okay. So, well, let's go through the final match here, and then we can bring our special guest hiding in the catacombs there. I didn't know he was going to be here, but glad that he is. Moxley versus Tanahashi, of course. Punk has the title. He's not relinquishing the title now that he's hurt. So this is for the interim title. Regal comes out with Moxley. I kind of like that, that Regal walked out with Moxley, even from the back and through the crowd. This crowd, you know, the match starts, and of course, crowds, they've been hyped the whole show, so of course they're hyped for the main event. And they were so hyped, and it was weird because at the beginning of the match, when the crowd's going nuts, the announcers were yapping about really stupid things that didn't mean anything at that particular point. And I just thought, you guys should shut up and should just be going on about how crazy this crowd is here.
Yep.
Instead of yapping about dumb little things. Tanahashi gives him like two drop kicks to the knee right away, gives him a dragon leg screw right away. So instantly he's going to go after his knee, try to take him out. Moxie got a pile driver for a near fall. Tanahashi did the somersault senton off the top for a near fall. He got thrown out of the ring. He did the steamboat skin the cat to come back in. Of course, you know, in a Moxley match, you have to have fighting on the outside. So they're all over the place. Moxley clears off the timekeeper's table. He choke slams Tanahashi through it. And I'm like, this is so weird to see Tanahashi in a match. When I saw Tanahashi going through a table, it was the weirdest thing. Like, in my brain, I'm just like, that is such a weird, disturbing image. I've never seen the guy go through a table before.
Two things. So it reminded me of his match with Jericho, right? Like, where it was a little more not your regular Tanahashi match. It reminded me of that match. Now, secondly, so I don't know how audible it was, but at one point early on in the match, the crowd was chanting, you fucked up. So apparently I got mentioned on a tweet from someone who was at the show, and they were basically saying that a fight broke out in the crowd. So
Oh, okay. Well, there you go.
There you go.
So, yeah, Tanahashi gets thrown through the table. He's got him back in the ring, and Moxie's just kicking him in the chest, going, I'm the ace, I'm the ace, which I thought was pretty cool. I love it when they scream at each other. But Tanahashi got him, gave him the sling blade. Moxley rolled. Now, this I did not like, and I really did not think this was necessary, and I really didn't think it helped the match at all. All Tanahashi did was give him a sling blade, and Moxley rolls out of the ring and does color off a sling blade. You gotta be kidding me. I just think Moxley is just so obsessed that he feels there has to be blood in every one of his matches. And I'm like, dude, you are not the Sheik. Again, here's another guy. Sit down and read this book about the Sheik. You know, you're going to burn it out. It means nothing. Like, and in this match, it was never a factor. It was never like Moxley was blinded by his blood. It was never like, maybe a little bit they sold that he was wobbly in that because he'd lost a lot of blood. But, and then that's the other thing, too. Off a sling blade? Like, really? Like, this just has to be done off poles, metal, chairs. You don't do it off a move like a sling blade. So it really bothered me that they did the color in this.
Yeah, that's the thing. I'm assuming that you're going to get color at some point in an AEW pay-per-view. So, whatever.
I think in this case, it's more Moxley. I don't think it's AEW. I think it's him, because he always has color in his matches, every single one of his matches. There was color nowhere else on this entire show, Boris.
Yeah, that's the thing, right?
Like, it's him.
I agree 100% with you.
Okay, so Tanahashi did the aces high off the top to Moxley on the floor. Moxley's bleeding all over the place. Like I said, not really necessary. Moxley tried twice to do the paradigm shift, but couldn't do it. Tanahashi did the aces high again off the top, and then he finally hit his big like frog splash, the high fly flow, but Moxley kicked out of that, got the bulldog choke on him, but Tanahashi worked his way out of that as well. Moxley tried to pin him, and Tanahashi kicked out, and Moxley's just like freaking, like, why won't you go down? And he starts laying in all these elbows and stuff, gets him in the rear naked choke. Crowd's going nuts. They're chanting for the ace, ace, ace. They're like totally chant for Tanahashi. They get back on their feet after they're on the ground there, and Moxie just grabs them quick, gives them the paradigm shift, and gets the win. And so, of course, as you again, even despite all this stuff where people thought Tony Khan had been hinting that Tanahashi was going to win the title, I never thought that Tanahashi would win. Why, in a promotion that is already injury-prone, would you put another guy who is injury-prone in your top position? Plus, I don't think New Japan would go for it anyways. And plus, Moxley's a better choice anyways. I really think so. Again,
and the G1. The G1.
And exactly, the G1 is coming up. And I thought it was a good match, but I really just... You didn't need the color. That really bothered me. I didn't like the color.
Yeah, you know what? It's bothering me now more, I guess, now that you and I talk. You know, we don't communicate at all while the show's going on.
Because, no.
You know, no. We try to go completely clear going into these after parties. So now that you've mentioned it, you know what? It's kind of funny. It is bothering me a little more, but it didn't bother me too much at the time, the color, that is. But it did feel... like such a weird, bizarro Tanahashi match. It just didn't feel like a Tanahashi match.
Yeah. So of course we can't have it just end like that. We got to have some major shenanigans here at the end. We can't go end a pay per view with just on a high note. And I guess they really feel they need to push that blood and guts because that's what we got here for another 5 minutes. I was already setting up my gear and getting ready to start with you guys, and I'm like, oh.
Same.
They're not done. So Jericho Appreciation Society comes out, attacks both Moxley and Tanahashi. That sends Kingston coming down, then Santana and Ortiz. Like I said, the big push is on for blood and guts. Claudio comes out because obviously he's going to be taking Danielson's place. So he comes out, he goes after Jericho, gives him the big uppercut. He got to do a better version of the swing. I couldn't tell if it was Parker Lee or Garcia. Do you know which one it was?
It was Garcia.
Okay. And the only thing about this, besides I didn't think you really need to do it anyways, but I guess the push is on for blood and guts. I felt so bad for Tanahashi. He had to lay there the entire time and just sell, and none of them were beating on him. Like, he was just, like, if they had beat on him as well, you're like, okay, yeah. But they didn't. The whole thing revolved around poor Tanahashi, who just had to lie there and sell the whole time. And I thought, oh, man, that's not fair. You shouldn't have to sit there and be ignored like that. So that was the end of the show. So... I mean, I thought the show was good. It's definitely thumbs up for me. I was worried that it was going to be crap after the go-home show and that, and I thought it was an actually very good, fine, entertaining show.
I knew the show was going to be good. I really did. I didn't doubt that this show was going to be a home run. It just the setup, and I have never, in the almost 2 years that I've been a part of the SNME crew, gotten so many messages like I did after our Dynamite review, with people just saying, like, you know, my view and this and that and blah, 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 you know, because I kept bringing up the casual fan, like, you know, God forbid I think about the bigger picture. But at no point did I think that this match or this show was not going to be good. It just, there are other factors that we in our bubble have to think about, right? So thumbs up from me. Maybe pay-per-view of the year once it's all said and done. I quickly talked with Matt. We're going to do all our scores for the show, from the show on tomorrow's BAM. But there's a lot of matches that are going to probably end up in our top 122 mm-hmm. list.
Yeah, I could see it. It certainly could be a pay-per-view of the year. It certainly has potential for that, absolutely. All right, let's welcome in a couple more members of the family here because I know they've been hanging out. Yeah, that's what
Before
I said, too.
Before we actually do that, one bit of huge news, at least for me, being a hardcore ROH fan supporter, Death Before Dishonor has been announced July 23rd. So there we go. Another kind of AEW-ish pay-per-view in less than a month.
Oh, wow. Interesting. Okay. That's wild. All right. Let's bring our guys on.
Both
Joe, are you there? Wake up, Joe. Joe Aguinaldo, we're calling you now. My partner here from the old Fox podcast is here. We'll get his thoughts. And Mike, the man, the main man now, Mike McGuire, is here as well. So let's hear from both these guys. Joe, we'll start with you. What did you think about tonight's show?
I was in and out of the show because I had you know, actual real life stuff going on. But from what I did see, it was pretty good. Orange Cassidy and Ospreay was much better than I thought it would be. So kudos to those guys. Somewhat disappointed in Thunder Rosa versus Toni Storm. I was expecting way more from that match.
Yeah, it was just kind of there. Like, it wasn't.
I might argue that and the IW, I can't believe I'm saying this, that and the IWGP might have been the two worst matches for me that I saw of this pay-per-view. I dug the interim AEW title. I agree with you guys wholeheartedly. I don't know what was with the blood, like, especially
off
like,
a sling blade.
I didn't know it came from a sling blade. If I thought it was like, you know, oh, maybe Mox got thrown into steel steps or something.
No, nope.
But my only problem is that ending. I just thought was way overbooked. And I put this in the chat, but I'm just going to double down on it. I hope Eddie Kingston gets his ass kicked because he's an idiot. I'm just going to put that out there. He's a doofus. And I hope he loses blood and guts all by himself.
Jeez. Whoa.
All right.
There you go. There's my thing.
Mike.
Oh, and that was a good, it was, you know what, from what I like the little I saw, the buy-in was actually pretty interesting. Probably going to rewatch that again.
What did you not like about the IWGP title match?
I just the fact that it was a four-way, I already had a problem with.
Well, sure.
Because, like, again, call me an old F, but, like, to me, that's, you know, that's a title that I want to see the two best wrestlers fighting for. And, you know, Adam Cole, you know, Jay White, Okada, Paige, fan of all of them. I just didn't want to see a four-way for that particular match. So going into it, I already had a problem with it. And then, like, you know, and with all due respect, that, you know, I hope Cole is okay, but, you know, it did seem like that ending was, you know, a little anticlimactic.
Yeah.
And again, if Cole was hurt, you know, I'm glad they stopped the match, you know, in order for him to not get hurt more. But at the end of the day, I was disappointed in that match.
How did you feel about Claudio being the mystery opponent?
Oh, I popped hard. I mean, it was like I was so happy to see that guy come out. And you guys kind of mentioned it that he, you know, when he came out, he looked really happy. And I mean, you know, I'm going to go back to like Ruby Soho, Toni Storm, when they came out, you know, their debut in AEW, all of them looked great. My question is, what's the follow-up going to look like?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and speaking of follow-up, what did you think about Shibata?
That was pretty cool. And again, I can't believe I'm going to say this, but in a card that had Okada, Tanahashi, you know, like
all Minoru Suzuki,
you know, all these guys, Orange Cassidy was arguably in my match of the night with Ospreay.
Oh, I guess I really have to go back and see that match. Of all the times for my friggin' thing to burn out, I really got to go see this match now.
It was it was pretty damn good, dude. You got to really see
good.
It.
Yeah. It was really good.
All right. Well, let's bring in Mike as well and get his thoughts on this. And where are you coming from? Where are you right now?
In Edmonton, Alberta.
Right on. Okay.
Yeah, so the home of TSN 1260, which proudly carries Sunday night's main event, usually after the pay-per-view airs, but that's okay. That's all right. They still love us anyways. But I went over to a buddy's place tonight to watch the show. And I skipped the pre-show because I knew I didn't have to do recaps tonight. So from what I heard, it was all right, I guess.
Yeah, whatever.
You know, plus I was so afraid of Double or Nothing timing that I didn't want to run the risk of even overexposing myself by an hour. So I did try and listen to some of what you guys were saying on the way back to what do you guys think of this name, first of all, okay? I mean, it's always going to be Lois's Dream Machine, the camper here, the mobile studio,
right.
If you
yeah.
would. But I tried this out on the show today, the Wrestle Wagon.
Ooh.
Because yeah, I have more wrestlers coming to the trailer soon here to sit down and be interviewed. And for all of you that thought it was junk, listen to that Godfather interview. I was quite proud. It actually sounded like a radio interview. It was nice.
Right on. Yeah.
Anyway, so if you're in with the Wrestle Wagon, we'll go with that. Excuse me. But as far as the night, it seems like everybody here has glowing reviews about it. I'm hearing Boris say that half the card is going to be their 122, whatever. Maybe I am a heat seeker after all. Lex Express 2 from Tommy Lang. Oh, man. I got to get on the gas for that to happen. But as far as the show, and realize I got one friend that's a diehard New Japan fan, knew everybody, right? He's like talking to you, Mouth, or you, Joe, who can list everybody, give me the New Japan backstory on everybody. And even he felt kind of the way that I felt going into it. Dave Meltzer on the show today said the same thing. You know, the matches on paper look great. Good wrestling isn't the problem here. It's making it interesting to watch the good wrestling. Yep. And that's where I had to bow out a couple times.
I guess just you're like bowing out right now. I guess you're bowing out right now. Yeah.
Found out. Hold on. Am I back now? I'm gonna go video free and maybe.
Okay.
Cool.
But it was really interesting to me to see that even this diehard fan was bringing up the fact that the IWGP title is never defended in things like a four-way.
Yeah.
And that they didn't even use that as a hammering point to push this match. That should have been a big deal. Never before has this title been defended. There's been multi-person matches involving the IWGP champion, but you know, if it turns into that, then you know, why not tell that story? You guys talk about overbooking with the finishes and everything. Sure, but I think a lot of the build-up to this was underbooked. I thought they told some great stories going into the matches on pay-per-view, but I'll be honest, guys, if I wasn't coming on tonight, I probably would have skipped this one going in. I was incredibly disappointed by the lack of surprises, by the lack of... This was a chance to make some defining moments tonight. I felt it was a run-of-the-mill pay-per-view. The match is good. Yes, absolutely. There was no tension between New Japan and AEW, which I think has been a mistake from the start of this thing. And I'm not saying that I want the Raw versus SmackDown rivalry of Survivor Series, but this is a real thing where it's two real companies that could have had, you know, some sort of leverage over the other.
Yep.
But I don't think
that's what they wanted to do, though, Mike.
I know they didn't. I know that's like, what they didn't want to do because they didn't do it.
Yeah. It's not that was never the idea, I think, from the start. I think the idea was here's the two biggest wrestling companies in the world and they're gonna work together to give you a show.
And that's fine, but again, I compared this to if you were a fan of the early seasons of The Walking Dead, when that was the hottest show on TV, for example, right? And you had your core list of characters. All right, and then they kill someone off. Okay, that means they're gonna open the door for someone else. That's fine. But here's the thing. They would kill off people, and then instead of bringing in a new character, they brought in 30 new characters. And then you have ROH people flying around in there. You got New Japan people flying around in there. You got latest indie pickup flying. Like, there's just so much. Like, if you're a wrestling fan, you're a fan of wrestlers, and I get that. And I cheer everybody on the roster because you know me, unlike Joe, who apparently has had the renovations take away a lot of his Filipino positivity tonight. I will say that I found a lot of the talents to be great. I just think that the show itself had nothing. There was no meat and potatoes to this show except for a couple matches that finally told a story in the match themselves. But coming in as a reason to watch this show, I didn't have one. But I watched it because I like wrestling. So,
Mike, I honestly agree with you. And that's kind of like what I was saying on All Elite Weekly, is that like from just a pure, you know, I'm just watching this because I watch it every week. This show had very little for me to grasp. This show had very little for me to give a crap about. I, as someone who watches, you know, 90% of New Japan shows, 90% of TV from All Elite, from AEW, you know, as a fan of wrestling, yeah, this show gave me what I wanted. But, you know, you're another person just saying the exact same thing that we've been saying for a really long time. And I agree with you 100%.
I'll give you an example. So last night, my friends at Trickstar Productions, they're putting on this thing called the Great Outdoors Comedy Festival. And it's stand-up outside, which is always a nightmare for a comic because you never get to really hear the laughs. But that being said, the show was fantastic. They had a lineup of really strong comedians. Talents from Saturday Night Live were there last night. The show was French kiss. They had an MC, though. And this isn't to knock the person, but she clearly didn't have a plan of where she was going to go for her in-between jokes. And I compare that to this show, where it's like you got this big supply of great talent or great material, but you're just trying to fit it in anywhere you can. That only works once in a while, and rarely does it work that well. So again, tonight, if you are a pure wrestling fan, I'm sure that's going to have a ton of great feedback as far as, because the match quality was great in a lot of these matches. There were a couple that were, and I'm going to go ahead and agree with Joe. I really do think that's a great photo. Thanks, Mark. I do think that, the Orange Cassidy Will Ospreay match, I do believe that actually delivered what I was expecting. I think that there's been a push behind the scenes to have Orange Cassidy break away from just being the sloth style guy and really do more of a make it a psychological thing. And I thought that it worked really well tonight. I thought his stuff with Ospreay was great. I agree with you guys. I heard a couple of you say that four-person match was a bit of a mess, but at the same time, there were solid moments in there. I don't know how many baby aspirins John Moxley took before that match, but I'm pretty sure I saw his head shoot off like a super choker at some points. And overall, it was a solid wrestling show top to bottom, but I said this going into it, if I didn't know who these wrestlers were and if it wasn't on AEW, I would have thought, I would have had the same feeling I would have had as walking into an indie show with talents I didn't know many of, and, there's some guys I know. Okay, cool.
Yep.
And I heard, Joe, I heard your thoughts on the women's match, too. That was, I walked into this, I didn't walk into the match, I sat on my ass and watched it on TV. But I told my friends this, and they kind of agreed. I said, this match can either go really well, or it's going to be a cluster. And I thought it was okay, but I don't know for everything that she delivers, that Toni Storm is actually fully confident in what she's doing right now, because I noticed a few times where, and I don't know what's going on in her head. I listened to an interview with her and Renee Paquette recently, and she seems kind of bewildered to be back in wrestling again. Yeah. And that kind of showed in the match. But yeah, I'm kind of sad that they didn't take the roll of the dice and put the title on Tanahashi. As you may have noticed, the theme of today's show, I was like, boy, what if they did?
I think it was kind of obvious we weren't going to get
hours
that
of wrestling tonight. Yeah, well, and I just like this comment that just came in. Less than 4 hours of wrestling tonight and 3 hours of waiting for John Cena tomorrow. You've literally just described my night tomorrow, getting ready. By the way, who's joining me for that tomorrow? Who's going to be joining me for the Raw review? No hands, eh?
We still have to figure that out, don't we?
Look at that. No hands, everybody. But you know who's going to be there? McGuire's going to be there for you. That's who. On that note, fellas, I don't know. Is there anything else you want to hear from me on this? Because I'm not disappointed, but I'm not really like, oh, wow, Forbidden Door was the greatest
thing
ever.
So. Yeah. I think for me, it was just that the go-home show was just so bad, and it just put me in such a bad mood, and I just thought, I just saw so much good wrestling to combat it, and I guess I was just happy that I enjoyed the show, and I wasn't sitting there swearing at the TV all night like I was during the go-home show.
Thanks, Mike.
I was an invited guest to my friend, so I was going to sit there and cuss all night, but it did cross my mind.
But I gotta say, like, I love that view just because this is what I've been saying. This is what I've been pushing. And the amount of hate mail I got the past few days is unreal because
Boris, you get so angry about it. Boris, you're so angry, though. That's the thing. I'm trying to bring it diplomatically. I will say this, though. There's one thing I learned after watching AEW times New Japan Pro Wrestling Forbidden Door tonight. And that is Taz is watching everybody's hips at all times.
Yes.
Taz paid a lot of compliments to hips tonight. There's got to be some sort of SNME radio family. I need you to make this some sort of mix between Taz talking about hips and Shakira Hips Don't Lie. That somebody make that song, okay? Because that's just something. All right, I'm going to get out of here, guys. But thank you for letting me hang out with you today. And everybody else, check out the show from today. That's all completely wrong now because Dave and I thought the Tanahashi were going to win. And check out the Godfather interview. Thanks.
We'll chat tomorrow.
Okay.
All right. So let's go to Mark. Have you anything else you want to add? I mean, you said a bit off the top there. Is there anything else you want to add before we go to those who might want to join us?
No, it's hard for me to talk because I've got like three air conditioners going in here just to keep my computer room cool. So,
We do have someone who was at the show.
Well, hang on, Morris.
He's waiting.
Okay. First, before we do that, Mark, your poll. What's the poll you have for tonight?
Oh yes, the match of the night poll. I've just launched it. Everybody have your say. What do you think the match of the night was? I didn't add every match from the pre-show, but I said something from the pre-show was an option.
All right.
Entire pre-show is an option.
Very economical. All right, so there you go, everybody. You can vote, and we'll see how that plays out here.
In the meantime, do you want to go to our friend who was at the show, Boris?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
So all right, Jake from Chicago.
Oh, of course.
Hey guys,
Jake.
Can you hear me good?
Yep.
Yeah. Hey guys, I'm just coming. I'm driving on the expressway right now, coming home from the arena, and still driving here, and pleasure to be with you guys tonight.
Nice. Cool. It's awesome for calling after being at the show. So yeah, it's great. Thank you so much. So I got to ask you, how was the experience? Like, one thing that I don't know if you were listening to us earlier, but like the crowd was hot from the pre-show to the main event. Like, at no point did they sound tired, and it elevated the show.
Oh, absolutely. It definitely like made the show better. And, you know, considering going into the pay-per-view, like considering, you know, I really feel bad because like the injury bug was such an asshole this entire summer. And considering like, you know, you can argue a definitely an underwhelming build going into this pay-per-view. I thought like the way, you know, I was, you know, like, I hate to call out Mike here, but I don't know what pay-per-view that he was watching, since like, well, I'm biased because I'm in the arena anyway, but this definitely over delivered what I thought it would be. And even like, to me, the biggest pop was when Shibata came out. But believe it or not, like, in my entire section was on its feet.
Was
on their feet, and they were, and when we heard those two notes and when his name popped up on the Tron, like, we all stood up, and I myself was yelling so bad, and I popped so much, like, my voice became hoarse after that. I was like, dude, like, considering like how many years he's been away, like, it's got to be 5 years now, actually.
Yep.
Yeah, it's 5 years, like, since 2017, and considering like he was not around at all, and to hear that pop, like, people immediately recognized him, and it was just awesome to see. And also Claudio coming out as well. It was a magical show tonight, and yeah, really, really happy at how it turned out. And let me just say, I did send a video on the Twitter, like, giving some notes on what you guys probably didn't see on the TV, is that just a couple of sections away from me, during the Tanahashi Mox main event, there was a huge fight that broke out during the crowd, and I shot a video of it. And unfortunately, it kind of took away and distracted the main event for the crowd, and people were chanting, "You effed up," and the idiot tried to fight with the security guards, tried punching him out. So that was kind of a down period for some of us there. So, but overall, like, I was really happy with how the pay-per-view turned out.
Yeah, I'm sure it must have been insane live, because that crowd, it came across so powerful on the pay-per-view. So I'm sure to be there, like, and honestly, I mean, you have to be somewhat. I could not believe that many people would know who Shibata was. Like, I was just blown away by that.
dude. It was amazing how it came out, and he was like a big star. I mean, I was kind of surprised that he, like, I'm wondering what the follow up will be. You know, could we see him again more in the ring? Well, he did return earlier in the year at Wrestle Kingdom, but I would love to see him in a match here in North America and in AEW. So.
Yeah, we'll have to see. I mean, the fact that they did it on the AEW show, right, is very intriguing, because I was surprised. I figured you would do this on a New Japan show, right? I'm really surprised that they would do it here. So you would have to think that something is going to come of it with AEW.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's definitely what I'm considering, too. Just a couple of other notes here. Is it just me or, like, some of us in... where I was seated with a couple of guys who I met at the show. We were talking about it a little bit, and did you guys ever consider if reffing was kind of an issue tonight?
We didn't talk about it. I mean, when it comes to a Bucks match, it's a broken record to talk about that. Right. I'm tired of talking about that. It's just a factor of their matches, and if you don't like it, you're not going to like it. So no, why not really? No, what are you thinking in specifics here?
Well, I was talking specifically about the triple tag match, and unfortunately, when it seemed like when Romero was trying to cover Dax, it kind of seemed like I think it was Paul Turner, his arm kind of like came off a little bit and it hit the mat, and it seemed like it was a three count.
I remember the spot you're talking about. Yeah. I remember that spot. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I remember that too. Yeah.
Yeah. Unfortunately, most of us in our section, but I wasn't included in that. So we're chanting "You fucked up" at him. And I kind of feel really bad about what happened. So yeah, just letting you know, like, what happened there. So about that mouth.
Was there anything extra after the pay-per-view went off the air?
Yes, very significant. Obviously, the copyright graphic came at the bottom of the screen. And then afterwards, Tony Khan came out just to say hi to the audience. And a very special guest came out right after the show. Brody Lee's son, Brody Lee Jr., decided to come out alongside Tony Khan just to say hello to the crowd. And we all popped for him and just saying, we were all chanting Brody, Brody, Brody. It was such a feel good moment getting to see the little guy again. And I mean, hey, he cut a very good promo and just saying thank you to the Blackpool Combat Club. And it was a really cool moment. Overall, despite the underwhelming build to the show, some would argue, I would say an almost perfect show to my standards. So definitely a 9 out of 10 show for me.
All right, right on. Well, thanks for joining us, Jake, as always, and have a good night.
Yeah, thanks so much, guys. Thanks so much for having me, and I hope I'll talk to you next time, whenever yep. that does. Oh, by the way, I almost forgot, actually. Did they announce, because I was at the arena, did they announce a date for All Out? Because I'm not sure if you guys have seen that yet.
Nope. No.
Oh, okay. So it's not just us. Okay, just making sure.
No, we just got the ROH...
They talked about the Dynamite in July, the Grand Slam Dynamite in July. That was about it.
Okay. All right. So not just us. So we're just still going to figure out that date. So, all right. Just wondering about that. So thanks so much, guys. And I hope you guys have a great week.
Okay. Take care.
You too. Thank you.
Take care.
Mark. Anyone else, Mark?
We have Chris Gaskin with his hand up. I'm assuming he's the next person coming up.
He is. He's on his way. Chris, come on up.
Anytime.
Hey, Chris.
Hey,
there
guys.
He is.
Hey.
How's it going?
Good, man. So
what
do you think?
First of all, I would like to say, as someone who has refereed professionally, sometimes we do mess up. Sometimes the hand does come down a third time when a wrestler kicks out. And I'm the ref in the match. He kicked out. It's a two count. All right. Deal with it, fans. Deal with it.
Love it.
Okay.
I really enjoyed this show. I unlike you guys, yes, I did not like the build to Will Ospreay and Orange Cassidy, but I knew those guys can go. So I was really looking forward to that match. And man, that match did not disappoint. You know, I was kind of bummed out by the finish of the four-way, the second one. But again, you know, if someone's hurt and you want to take the safety of these guys into consideration, yep. I guess that's just what has to happen in that instance. You know, I really thought though that there wasn't a bad match on the card, and even like the worst match on the card was still so good that by the end of the card, I really enjoyed it. I am with you guys. I have no idea why Moxley had to do color in that match at all. It made no sense, like the timing of it. And
off
when
a
they were
sling blade. Come on.
They did try to sell it as it was off the stomps that he took. But I was like, it's so late after the stomps that he took that it makes no sense that he does it right now. Like, I was just like, why is this necessary at all? Mm-hmm. I mean, having ref down here for years, it's really fun seeing, you know, a few of my boys like El Phantasmo, like Kyle O'Reilly in spotlights with these major companies. And I mean, you know, El Phantasmo, I thought the titty twister on Sting was hilarious with the no sell, and even better. It was unfortunate that Sting kind of missed the spot and pouted out. And also, every time Tony Schiavone yells, "It's Sting," I'm always yelling at some point in the match, "He's 63. Like, stop jumping off stuff, you goddamn maniac. Like, what are you doing? You're 63.
And the crazy thing is, you know, it's Sting coming to them with these ideas. You know, they're not saying to him, they're not telling Sting, "Oh yeah, you need to jump off the tunnel in this spot." It's Sting himself coming to him and going, "I want to do this."
The irony with him is no one says like, "Hey man, you're coming across a lot like Jeff Hardy right now. Maybe chill it out. You're 63. Like, I'm glad that those guys can try and keep him safe, and that, you know, he is doing those spots, at least the safest he can do those spots. But I mean, every time I just worry that, you know, at a guy, when you watch, you know, a lot of the older guys in New Japan, they aren't doing crazy stuff like that. You know, they aren't even taking a lot of bumps. It's just brawling. Yeah. I mean, you know, the few times I worked with Honky Tonk Man, that guy hadn't taken a bump for like the last 20 years of his career. Mm-hmm. Like, he'd crumble down, but he's like, "I'm old. Why would I take a bump? Like, there's no sense in it." And I do commend, you know, Sting's desire to go out there and entertain, but sometimes I just see him do stuff like that, and I fear the worst, you know. And especially, you know, last thing you want is someone slipping. In general, like that, when I see Jeff Hardy or Darby do crazy stuff, I still fear the worst, even though, you know, Darby's young and, you know, Jeff's Jeff. But it's like big spots like that, you know, always worry me. It's great when there's a bunch of guys there to take it and try to get them to land as safely as possible. But man, it's I worry about Steve Borden these days. I'm telling you guys.
Yep.
Well, until they tell him he can't do it, you're going to keep seeing it.
That's true. You know, I enjoyed the just flat out beginning to end. Even with a few of the botches here and there, you know, it was nothing that took away from the show. Yes, the build up to the show was not ideal at all. And no. I think that's just everyone getting injured and plans had to change. It seemed like every week plans had to change, and not just on the AEW side, on the New Japan side, they had to change. I mean, you look at, you know, what was supposed to be an 8-man switched to a trios because Himuru had he had a fever before he tried to board the plane. So, I mean, it's a shame that this card didn't come out the way that they wanted it to, but I kind of figured going into the show, like, this was going to be a good, fun show. The other thing that I really liked, I like the pacing of this show.
Me too.
I mean, yes.
Me too. I meant, yeah, definitely, especially after the last one, right? I talked about it.
Oh, God, yes. And it's not like I didn't like the last one, especially the back half of the last one, but I was so tired by the back half of the last one.
I talked about that earlier, how this one didn't have all the junk. It just was, it was totally streamlined. You just went match to match to match to match. And even though we sat through 12 matches, it did not seem like a long show. Whereas that other show, as great as it was, because there was so much filler and crap and him wanting to extend the show so the main event would be on at a certain time.
Yeah.
It was horrible. It was way too long.
And even with four of the nine main show, like main card matches, went around or slightly above 20 minutes, but it still didn't like take away from the length of the show. Like at no point did I really feel tired watching it.
Yep.
You know, at no point did it actually feel like some of the matches were filler matches. Even, I mean, unfortunately, I thought the women were placed in a tough spot. And I was hoping their match would be better than it was, but like they still had a really good match.
Yep.
I just all in all enjoyed this card, and you know I look forward to, I guess whenever their next one is, you know,
Wednesday, Blood and Guts.
Well, that's yeah, I guess so, right? I meant their next pay per view. Like I think one of the other things. If I were to talk about what I think is a downside with this company, you know, I think Tony's booking into these pay-per-views because he has so much time. Like, I think he should have that card ready to go a month before, but it's almost like he's running and gunning it the month of that show, where like half of it seems to be built within the last 2 weeks of it. And it kind of boggles my mind because I think you'd probably sell more pay-per-views, you know, if you knew what the main event was going to be a month out. And if you built the story around that.
It's a tough one, again, because he's got a lot of other stuff on his plate. And honestly, the injury thing has just been... Like, we've seen it so much, right? Like, anytime they seem to take a big step, an injury seems to hold them back, right? So that's a big problem as well, right? The Punk thing, Danielson, even this show, my God, even up to like what? Today I looked online and I see that, Takahashi's out of one of the matches now. It's like even right up until today, the day of the show, we had the injury issue. So that one...
When the 3 days before it was Ishii with his knee, right? It didn't stop. And it's not even, oddly enough, it's not even just AEW, New Japan, like this is going on in WWE. This is going all over right now.
The summer of injury, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Thanks so much, Chris.
Yeah, no problem, guys. Have a good one.
Okay, take care.
Thank you. I think that's it, Dan. I think we are done at least for this part of the show. And just want to remind everyone that our next after party is in less than a week, 6 days, Saturday.
Of course.
July 2nd, Money in the Bank, WWE Premium Live Event this time. And we're going to be coming at you after that show, chatting all things Money in the Bank.
All right. Sounds good. Anything else before we split? That's it. We're done.
One quick question I have for you before we go.
Okay.
So, it was announced ROH, July 23rd. Are we going to get this weird mix of random storylines for that ROH pay-per-view in AEW TV? Like, how do you think they're going to handle this?
Oh, how they're going to...
The third month with
right.
a pay-per-view.
They're going to have to probably put it in the paper, in some way on the AEW television because they don't have anything else, right? Like they haven't got ROH television, set up unless he plans to use the internet heavy on that kind of stuff. I'm not really sure. That's a great question, but I'm assuming though it's going to end up in AEW because there's no other place to put it. We're already seeing it anyways, right?
Yep.
So, which is tough because they don't already have enough time for their own guys as it is. So it makes for a very strange mixture, you know, with him owning two companies like this.
Yeah, it is.
And the fact that you don't have an outlet for the one, so you kind of have to use your outlet for the other one for both of them. And yeah, that's probably, yeah, that's probably what we're going to see. When is it? July? So it's a month. It's just a month away.
July 23rd.
Eh? Yeah, geez. That's, yeah, that's crazy. I was hoping they were going to stay away from this kind of stuff.
And yeah, this, like, but here we are.
Every month kind of thing. Like, that's ridiculous. Is that so a Saturday? I'm joining you. Is that a Saturday or Sunday? It's a Saturday.
It's a Saturday. Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right.
At the very least. Right. So yeah, we'll see what we do with that show. But this Wednesday, Blood and Guts from Detroit, I'll be there. I guess I'm joining you for the show on Thursday.
Well, that'll be great then, after you can give us the whole live perspective. And
yep,
yeah, definitely. That'll be that will be an interesting show to be at live and in Detroit, which, again, I hate to mention the Sheik again for like the 10th time tonight, but that was the home base of that kind of style for the longest time and early. Like, we're talking the Sheik's running that promotion in the late 60s, early 70s, and it's just like, it's all just like Blood and Guts, crazy hardcore stuff. It's one of the first places ever, so it's somewhat, it's definitely appropriate that they're doing it in Detroit, that's for sure. It's a shame the Sheik wouldn't be alive. He's still not, because he would. It would be great to see him at a show like this. That's,
yeah,
for sure.
Exactly. All right, patrons, just remember, get your renewals in, because Money in the Bank is coming at you in less than a week. That's 6 days. So thank you to everybody. Mouth, lead us out.
that's it. We're done. Everybody, go to bed, brother. Love that match.